Welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage as we travel to different spots throughout our community to listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans. This week, Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan gives his annual State of the City Address. Hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, this speech was recorded at the Denina Center in Anchorage on Monday, September 16th.
Good afternoon, everybody. If I could have your attention, we're going to kick this thing off. Welcome to the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce's Make It Monday Forum. My name is Chris Schutte. I'm the Executive Director for Anchorage Downtown Partnership and a board member with the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. Today, Mayor Dan Sullivan is here to give his annual State of the City Address and give an overview of the city's finances, which I'm sure are good, including what his administration has accomplished over the past year. Mayor Sullivan will also discuss the city's upcoming budget challenges. I'm sure many of you will have questions throughout the presentation today. There are slips of paper at your table. Feel free to use those to jot down your questions. Raise them high and somebody from the chamber staff will come by and grab them, and we'll get through as many of those questions with the mayor at the conclusion of his presentation. Mayor Dan Sullivan is a fourth-generation Alaskan. He's the third of nine children of Anchorage pioneers George and Margaret Sullivan. Mayor Sullivan was elected chair of Anchorage Assembly in 2006 and then became mayor in 2009. Mayor Sullivan is the founder and co-owner of McGinley's Pub in downtown Anchorage. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome today's presenter, Mayor Dan Sullivan.
Well, thank you very much, Chris, and thanks everyone for coming out on this beautiful, beautiful Anchorage Day. It is a great day to live in Anchorage, Alaska, as is every day, despite the fact that over the last couple of years, we have really seen some very unusual things in our fair city. We've had, as I think you all are aware, 2 years ago, we had the snowiest winter in Anchorage history. Last winter was the coldest winter in Anchorage history. Sandwiched in between, we had the hurricane of 2012. We have now completed in the summer the most consecutive days of sunshine, followed by, in September, the most consecutive days of rain. So we are now the winter weather center for the entire universe, apparently. So we like accolades. We like being number one at different things, and we've been doing it. So thanks to Troy Swanson for the graphics on the screen today. Troy, thank you. Well, we're going to start off with talking about the city's financial health, and it's a good report overall. We've, over the last 4.5 years, have had very, very challenging times in terms of making sure that the city puts forth budgets that provide the essential services that we all expect, and at the same time do so responsibly in terms of particularly property tax collection. Some of the things that are the highlights, 4 consecutive years with a budget surplus. This doesn't happen in government very often, and it's because the hardworking employees, the municipality, the executives that set the policies really have done a great job of making sure that we put forth budgets that are responsible, and at the same time, the consciousness that you don't have to spend every single dime in your budget, I think, is really set in. If you look at cities around the nation, whether it's Detroit or Stockton or others that are having challenges, they would love to have a statistic like that, 4 consecutive years with budget surplus. In 2012, we achieved a bond rating upgrade, one of the few cities in America to get their bond rating upgraded because of the financial methods and means that we've been implementing, and we maintained that bond rating through 2013, and it's never an automatic that you maintain your bond rating. They reanalyze you every single year, and so for 2 consecutive years to hold that AA-plus status is very important, and it means many, many millions of dollars in savings when we do sell our debt out there in the bond market. The better your bond rating, the better interest rates, and the more we save the public. The MOA Trust Fund, another great story. Our finance team, through the 12-month period ending at the end of June, and that should be 2013. That was my typo there. Sorry about that. But it earned almost 13%, and it beat all other major Alaska investment funds. So our finance team has done an outstanding job managing your money. That's a good thing. Just a quick preview of the 2014 budget. We have not presented it yet to the Anchorage Assembly. We do that on October 1st, but we can give you just some general preliminary numbers. We're looking at about a $471 million budget. This will be down approximately $5 million from the previous year's budget. And again, very seldom in government do you see a budget that's actually lower than the previous year's budget. But there are some reasons for that is that, number one, we are seeing results from the efficiency measures we've introduced. We're able to do the same services for less money. But also in 2012 or 2013, we did indeed use some of our budget surplus to pay for some one-time expenses. And so that made the budget maybe a little bit higher than it normally would have been. So that's why we're looking at a smaller budget for 2014. And then property taxes, look about a 1.5% increase in property taxes. Number of reasons for this, but generally related to the amount you spend. If you keep spending down, you keep property taxes down. They just go hand in hand. So pleased about that. And then reason property taxes are going up is we are seeing a slight decline in some other revenue sources. For example, in the police department where our citation revenues are down a bit and some of the other normal revenue sources are on just a little bit down. This kind of shows you the historical trend in government spending and where we're at today. As you can see, between 2003 and 2008, it doesn't go all the way back to 2003, but we had a budget of about $289 million in 2003. In 2008, $431 million. It grew $142 million during that period, which was 8 or 9% growth and represented about $26, $27 million increase every year. We've got the trend down to where the period since 2008, the budget's only grown by $40 million. It sounds like only $40 million. That is a lot of money. But had we not taken the measures that we've taken, the gap between what we're spending now and what would have been spent on this trend is about $80 to $100 million less in spending had we continued that same spending trend. So our goal was to achieve sustainability in our budgets, and I think we're pretty close to that equilibrium. Which means that we can go forward with budgets without having to look at further draconian cuts, and our realignments, our efficiency measures are working, and it's now I think pretty much in balance, which is where we want to be going forward. Property tax relief. This is a great story for the taxpayer. One of the things that that we've done is our finance team, in addition to investing your money in very, very wise manner, they've also always looked for opportunities to refinance the debt that the city has. And they're refinancing, whether it's going to commercial paper, whether it's going to different loan rates, they're always looking for the best deals for you. And they've saved over $27 million in direct property tax savings because it's your property tax that pays the debt that the city incurs. The other thing that happened over the last couple years was in 2010, there was a citizens initiative which we helped sponsor and move forward, which basically put the utility payments back under the tax cap. They'd been removed under the previous administration. What that means is normally your tax cap is a bucket, and the bucket's filled up first with all the other taxes that we get, bed tax and fees and fines, all those things. And then the rest is made up with property tax, but you can't go above the bucket because you can't put more water in a bucket than it'll hold. So that bucket's your tax cap. By moving utility payments back into the bucket, it displaces property tax to the tune of about $61 million in property tax replacement since we moved the utility payments back in. So that's been, again, a tremendous savings for the taxpayer. If you think your property taxes are high, and always in some cases, they go up a little bit as your property appreciates, I guarantee you they would have been significantly higher without that citizens initiative. And then the other thing that keeps taxes under control is not always taxing to the tax cap. If you can accomplish what you need to do, deliver the services you need to do without always taxing to the tax cap, then that's permanent savings for you because the next year's taxes start at where the tax cap finished. So staying under the tax cap is permanent tax relief going forward. So those two things alone have been almost $82 million in total property tax savings. So you can see by the bar chart there, it kind of shows just a little different means to express it. But bottom line is between utility payments and under the tax cap, about $82 million in property tax savings. Total property tax for the municipality and the school district, because we do collect on behalf of the school district as well. And once again, you can see the trend. The trend was certainly escalating property taxes. We've definitely got that flattened out so that, again, for the property taxpayer, it's a good story. The other thing that we've been really working on is making sure that we decrease municipal debt. One of our goals has been since we came into office is that when we do offer bonds in April, and the public has been very supportive, we've passed every single bond we've proposed since we came into office. And what we've tried to do is make sure that those bonds are less than the debt that we're retiring. For example, in 2011, I think we had about $34 million in principal paid off, but we only incurred $30 million in new debt. Same thing the following year, about $3-4 million more in principal paid than in new debt incurred. And so again, you can see the trend line. We're reducing municipal debt every single year. And again, that's a good thing. It's one of the reasons that we did get our bond rating upgraded, amongst many other things, but they like to see good manageable debt, and that's a key factor for keeping your bond rating the way it is. One of the things that we always look at is, of course, the capital budget. These are the funds that build our roads, upgrade our parks, build us new fire stations, get us new equipment for our police force. And the state of Alaska in 2013, our total capital budget came in at about $143 million. You can see the different list. The key road projects were the UMed Northern Access at $20 million, O'Malley Road Reconstruction at $20 million. And you know, those are going to be vast improved roads. The new Northern Access into the UMed District has become one of the major employment centers. And of course, with the student population at the university, it's just growing leaps and bounds. And the more connections you have, the less pressure there is on any one road. So that's going to be a key connection. There's a lot of folks who have concerns about, you know, a road through the university because, you know, there are trails, there's woodlands, there's, you know, it's a nice park-like setting. And so the goal is to really make a country lane kind of road out of it so it doesn't become a cut-through for people to get to Elmore Road. And I have confidence in our design team that working with the state, Dowell Engineers, and our group, we'll make sure that this really is a context-sensitive road that really reflects the character of the neighborhood that it's going through. And then some of the other things that the legislature always is very, very generous with is our pavement rehab and our drainage programs. We put in money, they put in money to match it, and we've been very successful with our matching programs with the state over the years. I see we have some state legislators in the audience, Gabrielle Ledoux, and maybe some others if I miss you, but appreciate all your support for Anchorage projects over the years. And then the local bonds, we had about $26 million in local bonds approved, and again, you can see the list of them. Most of them fairly basic road projects. Park and rec bond, we didn't have a park and rec bond our first couple years in office, but the last couple years we have, and again, the public's been very supportive of them. These particular ones, the Veterans Memorial in particular, if you've driven down I Street lately and see all the work going on at the Veterans Memorial, it really is going to be a fitting, a significant project for a town that has you know, so many veterans residing here. As you know, the statistic, Alaska has more veterans per capita living here than any state, and we want to make sure that we properly recognize their service. And then again, you can just read the others, public safety bonds, public transportation. We're always trying to you know, keep our assets maintained, and that's been one of the hallmarks of what we've been working on, is making sure that we really do a good job maintaining our public assets. In the public safety realm, the Anchorage Police, you know, we can the crime statistics, for three straight years, we've seen a decline in crime. The 2012 statistics are not complete yet, but it looks like there's a slight uptick in crime in 2012. There's no particular rhyme or reason. It does reflect national trends, just like the three previous years reflected national trends of declining crime statistics. And again, 2012, it looks like a slight increase. So not a pattern yet, not a trend, but hopefully a one-year anomaly. But again, it'll take a couple years to see whether or not we're trending again the wrong direction. As you can see, police academies going. I think we've got how many recruits, Chief? 19 recruits who will be starting on November 4th. We're going to have another police academy next year. We're looking for a 28-person academy. We know that there's retirements coming up in the police department. We want to make sure that we do a good job of backfilling with good qualified candidates. over the years, too, we've between bonds and legislative grants, obviously new equipment, whether it's onboard computers, cameras. We've increased the number of officers who are carrying tasers now, recognizing that you know, we want to explore certainly less lethal ways of controlling folks. And the tactical range out in Birchwood is another one of our key projects. We received $5 million in funding this year. This brings us to a little bit over $8 million, and so we still need a few more million to get to the $11 million project cost. This will be a statewide facility used by law enforcement personnel all over the state, whether it's troopers, whether it's local police departments. This will really be a significant training facility. Under the public safety realm, we do include a couple items. Tobacco tax evasion, amazingly enough, well, not amazingly, when there's money to be made, criminal enterprises seem to jump into action. And our police department, in conjunction with the federal forces, did a great, great job basically bringing this case to justice. And it's looking like at least $1.3 million, probably more, has basically been evading us in terms of the revenue sources. So when we talk about revenue down a little bit, you know, this is one of the sources where we've been bled off into the criminal activity. In the Anchorage Fire Department, we just finished a SAFER grant that allowed us to pay for 26 firefighters and 3 safety officers. The grant helped us keep our overtime costs down. We're applying for another SAFER grant, so we can add 10 additional firefighters. Again, help control overtime and make sure that we're properly staffed. Like in any department, you've got situations of retirement, you've got medical leave, and we do have a requirement to keep a certain number of fire personnel on board at all times, so we're gonna apply for this new grant. If you've driven down McRae Road recently, the brand new Station 5 over here in the corner, beautiful new fire station. We've opened a couple over the last few years, and we've got a couple more in the queue. So we're pleased about that. We want to make sure that our first responders have the best facilities and best equipment. We've added new ambulances, new fire trucks, some new water rescue craft. And next year, like I say, 3 other fire stations. You know, our fire department gets recognized for their cardiac save statistics, and when you're riding in an ambulance and you're one of those victims, you want to make sure you're in the best piece of equipment that that money can buy. They're not cheap, but again, if it's you in the back of that rig, you want to make sure it's fully functional and a good piece of equipment. Park and Rec highlights. One of the key things we've been doing over the last couple of years, and John Rada from Park and Rec is here today, but his team has done an outstanding job making sure that our parks are well maintained. One of the key things, of course, is the Coastal Trail, which is considered to be one of the finest public assets of any city anywhere in the country. We repaved 7 miles this year. How many miles last year, John? Almost 2 miles last year. So almost 10 miles of the Coastal Trail repaved. And if you've been on the trail, the sections that have been redone are just outstanding. And, you know, again, a great asset for the city, and having it in good shape really means a lot. As you can see, we've also taken care of 40 different park improvement projects, more than $6 million. I didn't bring my glasses. And one of the good things is that we leverage these dollars with the Park Foundation, which then goes to other groups like the Rasmussen Foundation. And so when we do get bond money or grant money, we are able to leverage that money and get a lot more bang for our buck. We also have partner organizations out there in the community, nonprofits that also provide recreational services. The YMCA, for example, was successful in getting a $6 million grant from the legislature for a new YMCA pool. Boys and Girls Club, $2.3 million for facility improvements. A new sports facility for tennis, volleyball, basketball requested by the Alaska Tennis Association. Nordic Ski Club, about $900,000 for improvements to their facilities. So if it's not directly us improving parks and, you know, our trails, other nonprofit groups are doing the same thing. But we all have the same common goal. We want to make sure that people of every socioeconomic status has an opportunity for recreation in the city of Anchorage. And that's what lends to the quality of life here, is that everyone has access to these wonderful facilities. And again, the ones that we build and the ones that our partners in the nonprofit world build and maintain as well. Couple other ones, real excited about the fact that when we first started creating dog parks, looking at examples of where they'd been successful elsewhere, that was the most successful ones, like in Madison, Wisconsin, and others, were fenced dog parks, because they minimize any interaction between dogs off leash and people who don't want to be around dogs off leash. Like in some places in town, you can be riding along a bike trail and a dog comes charging up, and you know, you don't know if that dog's friendly or not friendly. It can be a little bit intimidating. In fact, there's been numerous incidents of interaction with folks recreating and folks using that same area for a dog park. So I think the more that we can achieve some of the fenced-in ones for exclusive use, the better overall. So one at Arctic Benson Park, and then a new one at Connors Bog coming up next year. The other thing that we're excited about, too, is as part of the Project 80s monies, we just completed assessments of Ben Bokey, Dempsey Anderson, and the Sullivan Arena, and the Harry McDonald ice rinks. All of these ice rinks need new ice-making equipment, and so we had professional engineering firm come in and give us estimates and the best recommendations on what it'll take to get those facilities spruced up so they can be literally viable for the next 20 years or so. And we got good recommendations, and now we know where we're going to direct the Project 80's money to be most effective. Economic development, you know, we've really recovered very, very well from 2008, 2009. You can see the list of some of the projects that are coming through our planning department. We've got a $19 million new office building at International and Sea at JL Properties is putting together. Over in South Anchorage off of C Street and Minnesota area, the new Cabela's Sporting Goods store, new engineering building at UAA. You've got renovations at Alaska Regional Hospital, a new parking garage at the Tribal Health Consortium. One of the ones we're really excited about is the TDX Aviation Park, which is down here in the lower right-hand corner. This is a double benefit for the city. It's a facility that is going in where the old armory used to be right there on Spinard Road. We sold the armory to TDX for about $4.5 million. They're putting in a major new parking garage for the airport, as well as facilities that will actually resemble aircraft. So it's going to be very theme oriented, and ultimately the Coast Hotel right to the west side of what they're building now will actually be torn down and a new hotel will go in there. So significant economic development project there that we're very excited about. Again, not only because we were able to sell unused municipal property, but this is now land going on the tax rolls, which will generate significant property tax for us. And you can see some of the others, new blood bank, a significant building right there on DeBar and Airport Heights. And of course, one that we don't quite have numbers for yet, but we're very excited about Bass Pro Shops moving into Glen Square. Glen Square has sat there, you know, very, very vacant for, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years now, and to have a major tenant come in there is really significant. It'll create a synergy that'll really start revitalizing that mall. And they've agreed to do as much hiring from the local community as possible. So I think it's really going to be a win-win having Bass Pro Shops come in. Ship Creek is another one of our economic development projects, which we think has got incredible potential. The architectural firm, internationally recognized firm of Kling Stubbins, has completed their preliminary work. And this is a view of what Ship Creek could actually look like from the east looking towards the ocean. And one of the things that they did was they looked at, you know, the viability of Ship Creek in terms of a new urban downtown employment and housing center, knowing that the trend nationwide is that people want to live in urban environments. The millennials, the younger generation, plus the retiring generation wants to be near the vitality of a downtown. And so Ship Creek really fits that bill perfectly. It has challenges, and this is the reason that, you know, Ship Creek probably isn't more developed to this day, but several significant things happened over the last couple of years. Number one, the legislature changed the railroad's leasing length from, 55 years to 95 years, which all of a sudden makes it very, very viable for private development. A 95-year lease is almost considered ownership in the world, and plus when you have possibility of extensions. So it does now allow for capital investment in an area that before was somewhat limited. And so the concept includes a new saltwater marsh, infill, where you're actually filling in land for new buildings, whether they be hotel, residential, some hillside residential built up against the bluff, a new year-round market, possibly restarting of the old Kinnick power plant to provide waste heat to this entire area. You've got a new amphitheater planned, some incubator space, just really, and then some nice open square space. The challenge, of course, is it's a railroad yard, and you're working around a functioning railroad. So the planning has to be done, obviously, with our friends at the railroad. They've been involved in the process from day one, been great partners, and we know that going forward, nothing can really happen down there without our joint efforts. And so we're going to work very cooperatively with them. But all projects start off with a plan, and the good thing about the firm Kling Stubbins is they bring with them a group called Boston Global Investors, BGI. BGI brings in the private developers if the public sector is willing to put in the infrastructure. And the way they put it is, if the government's willing to do the horizontal, we'll bring in the people that'll do the vertical. And one of the things that's already exciting is the largest apartment owner in the state, and maybe in the entire Northwest. Dean Widener, he owns 42,000 rental units throughout his system, has already been in discussion with the railroad about possible housing options down there. So we've got you know, some of the key developers already looking at this plan and saying, okay, how do I fit in? And that's what it takes. Really, the concept ends up being, this is the view from the west, part of the thing would be a new cruise ship dock, so that when passengers, if we are able to maintain cruise ship service, which has kind of been on again, off again, but instead of being down here in the industrial port when they arrive, they would be here with this incredible development and in the backdrop of Anchorage and the mountains. So it'd be a great vista coming into Anchorage. It would literally be the gateway into the city, which is exactly what it should be. And as they say, we are a city on the water without a waterfront. And there's very, very few cities that, you know, have the Pacific Ocean sitting right there that doesn't have a developed waterfront. So I want to thank AEDC. They've been managing the contract with Kling Stubbins on our behalf. Bill Pop and his group have done a great job. Very, very public process, great interaction with so many different sectors that all have to be involved to make a development like this come to reality. Another thing that, again, on economic development, the 49th State Angel Fund, you've heard me talk about this, but we're the only city in America to receive an allocation from the Department of the Treasury for venture capital monies. This money went entirely to state governments, except for us. We were able to secure funding. We've been working with many, many businesses that either are startups or expanding their business. We've already allocated some of the money. We've got another $8 million for a total of just over 10, which are being recommended for investment, and now we're in the due diligence phase. So we've got a new round of applications. That ends October 27th. If you do have an opportunity that you think would be worthy of some good venture capital, you do have to match the venture capital investment dollar for dollar with other capital sources, whether it be loans or equity investment from others. But again, it's a great opportunity. You can go to the website at the bottom, www.49saf.com. Another thing we're excited about, and the whole city is starting to get excited, it's just amazing what kind of response we're getting from throughout the community, even from around the state, and that is for the Anchorage Centennial. We will be 100 years old in 2015. We're going to host over 100 different events commemorating that. The goal is to make it culturally, educationally, socially significant, and we've got already some legacy projects that we think are going to be outstanding. As is typical with the either centennials or 50-year celebrations, there will be a centennial book. Flip Todd, who has produced many, many Alaskan-themed books, won the RFP to produce that. I'm very excited about the documentary film on Anchorage that Emmy Award-winning journalist John Larson will be coordinating that effort along with John Tracy and Todd Hardesty. So got a really fabulous team. And one of the things we're going to do is when that documentary is done, we're going to have literally a premiere at the PAC so that there'll be a kind of a red carpet affair to really celebrate this documentary. Because given the talent involved in it, I just know it's going to be significant. We have an Anchorage Centennial app being developed by the Alaska Channel. And we are now open for community grants. That opened on September 15th. So if you do have a project that you think would be worthy of centennial funding, you can contact Susan Duck. You see the information at the bottom, www.anchoragecentennial.org. So it's, again, very excited. It's not just a 1 month or 2 month celebration in 2015. It really starts right now and is ongoing. And the museum is also involved in the centennial in a big way. The Arctic Flight exhibit, this year is 100 years of history of aviation in Alaska. Just starting now is the Dena'ina exhibit, the Dena'ina Way of Living, which is the first comprehensive exhibit of the Dena'ina Athabascan people. This will be a touring exhibit when it's done. It's just a tremendous, tremendous work by the museum. We will see the Voyages of Captain Cook and Searching for the Northwest Passage, again, another significant exhibit, which will be touring at the end of its stay here. And then finally, we'll have an exhibition of Anchorage itself, all the culture and history and all the things that have made Anchorage from a tent city to what we are today will be an exhibit as well. And we did really kick off the centennial, and I didn't put it up there, but with the commissioning of the USS Anchorage. If you were able to take part at all and go visit that ship in May when they were here, really tremendous to have that vessel commissioned here in Anchorage, Alaska, and named after our city. What a great honor. Probably one of the thrills of my whole life was being able to get on that Osprey with spouse and others and take off vertically, launch off horizontally, and land on the ship in the middle of the ocean, and then cruise in with the ship from Homer to Anchorage, an experience that probably never would have again and never anticipated having before, and just tremendous. What a great group of people that man these things that serve us in the military. The other thing we're working on is, why not? The Olympic Winter Games Exploratory Committee, and people, I think, sometimes forget, especially if you're new here, that Anchorage was actually the United States' choice to bid on the 92 and 94 Olympic Winter Games, they like to call it. So we didn't do too well in 92, but in 94, we came in third, and actually we're very, very close in the voting. And those bid things were put together in the mid to late 80s, so it's been almost 30 years since Anchorage was going through that bid process, and I'd like to think that 30 years later, we're stronger, we're more equipped, we're better prepared. We've held numerous national and international events in the Olympic Winter Game categories, and I think that it's worth looking at. It's to be a truly great international winter city hosting the Olympic Winter Games is something that you could not top on a resume. One of the things that makes it interesting is that whether or not the Olympic Committee goes for the 2024 Summer Games, and it was just announced that Tokyo will be hosting the 2020 Summer Games, which according to some folks means that they'll probably want to go back over to the European hemisphere for 2024, which might improve our chances of the Olympic Winter Committee looking at 2026 Winter Games with more focus, and that would put us, I think, right in the ballpark for possibly being contenders. So the committee really, all they're doing at this stage is just reviewing the work that was done before. Do we have the venues? Would the marketing work for Anchorage? Want to measure the economic and community impact and then report on findings, and then we'll decide whether or not to proceed. So really no money being spent. It was a volunteer group of Olympic athletes, business leaders, and previous folks from the previous bid committees, and they're going to be doing a lot of free work for us just to let us know, hey, you know what, this is viable. Let's give it a shot. Education Summit that we held 2011-2012, we're continuing efforts on that. A new nonprofit has been formed called Education Matters, Inc. It's headed up by Cheryl Frasca, my former budget director, former state budget director as well. And they've been working on one of the focuses out of the summit. There were four main things that came out of it. One is we need to raise the bar higher in Alaska. Alaska has the fifth lowest bar in the nation for what we consider to be proficient. We need to get great teachers in every classroom. Obviously, there's a lot of great teachers in the system, but we need to make sure that that's consistent across the board. We need to offer more choice to students. If there's waiting lines for some of the great programs like Chugach Optional or ABC schools, we need to offer more choices. And we need to keep the community engaged, because only an engaged community can affect change in education. One of the things that just happened this year was a tremendous great teacher colloquium. We had Pasi Sahlberg, the Minister of Education from Finland, presented, as did Dr. Low from Singapore. They're two of the top nations in the world. Finland is tops in the world in educational performance. So to have their Minister of Education come and tell us, how they did it, what a great lesson for all of us to learn from. And one of their key things is the rigor that teachers go through to be a teacher in Finland is it's just much more rigorous than what we normally require to get into the classroom, and that seems to be a key element of it. We're constantly working on homelessness. As you know, this is an intractable problem that we seem to take nibbles at. It's sometimes one step forward, two steps back, but I think we've done a pretty darn good effort on making sure that the folks do find a place, particularly in the winter, if they really want help, that there is help available. We expanded our cold weather shelter program. We implemented the cold weather plan. We've got now, I think, six churches that have signed up, providing hundreds and hundreds of bed nights for homeless populations, mostly families that are displaced. We've been continually giving support to some of the key organizations, the Brother Francis Shelter. They had a federal grant just expired for them, and so ourselves and Fred Meyer provided $30,000 each to help make up for that grant loss. We constantly support Covenant House. We gave a $750,000 grant to Clare House so they could buy the Spinard Hotel, or the Eagle's Nest Hotel, and double their capacity for displaced women and children. We're going to continue to clear out illegal camps. If you make it easy to camp illegally, more people camp illegally. That's all there is to it. And public safety-wise, we don't want people in our parks not knowing what condition they're in and not knowing, you know, you should never be afraid to take your family to a park because you don't know who's lurking in there or what condition they're in. Carlock Manor, you know, some people would say it's been a success because folks that might normally be dying in your dumpsters and back alleys now are in a more humane setting. They still drink, but they find the drinking does decline. We're actually looking at doubling the capacity of Carlock Manor, working with Mental Health Trust and with Rural Cap, looking at a new site and getting them out of the business district there in Fairview. And then obviously we continue to work to educate folks that you've got to, if you ever do, don't give money to panhandlers. You just bought them a drink when you give them money. Their sign can say anything, but what they do with that money is they buy alcohol. So we're hoping folks, the Change for the Better program urges people, give your money to a nonprofit like Brother Francis or Salvation Army or any of the groups out there that truly can deal with the problem rather than just buying folks a drink. Sales tax is another thing we're working on, just to have a discussion with the community. We want to find out, you know, if a sales tax was implemented and it replaced property tax dollar for dollar, who would be interested? Or what if it was a seasonal sales tax? Or what if it was a sales tax that was outside the tax cap and actually added to revenue? You know, what are folks thinking? So we've set up four community discussions. We're using the same facilitators that we used for the Education Summit. They're very, very professional at gathering information from the community and really find out what people are thinking rather than just a poll. So you can see the dates, and those will be broadcast more extensively over the next few weeks so that everybody will have a chance to participate. And again, it's been on the ballot four times, it's failed four times, and one of the reasons is nobody ever engaged the community before throwing it on the ballot. It just was, let's see what people think, and the vote has always been negative. But, you know, it's been a while, it's been a decade, and we'll give it a discussion. Still working on energy issues. The bills that were passed in 2010 are yielding results. We now have gas storage. A lot of independent companies finding gas. And one of the challenges might be there's not enough market for all the gas. So we're hoping that the LNG facility will get back in the export business and Agrium could start back up and everybody will have a chance to market their gas. South Central Power Plant came on board, new combined effort with Chugach Electric. And we're very pleased, very efficient power plant, saves natural gas. I think I've only got a few minutes left, so I'm going to run through some of these a little bit quicker. Port of Anchorage, three major reports came in. One from the Inspector General that says that MARAD failed in their responsibilities to manage the project. We've had a forensic audit done of the design itself, which concluded that CH Tomb Hill was correct in saying that the design was improper. And we now have an RFP on the street for a new management team to manage the project. So it's been a couple years since there's been any activity down there, but it's a good thing because, quite frankly, you've got to have the right path going forward, particularly if we're going to be asking federal and state funders for more dollars. We have about $130 million in hand right now to kind of kickstart the project again. And so, JJ, how am I doing? A couple minutes? Okay. We obviously know the Responsible Labor Act passed. It narrows the parameters by which negotiations can happen. It went to court. The judge said that, yes, you could indeed have a referendum to undo that law. So I know the unions have been out collecting signatures and I think submitted them to the clerk's office. But law of unintended consequences, if indeed you can use initiatives or referendums to undo these kind of laws, there's already an initiative started by a group that eliminates the municipality collecting dues for the union. So you might end up seeing dozens of these kinds of initiatives and referendums over the years if truly by that method you can undo what we consider to be kind of the administrative functions. Quickly over accolades, we always like bragging. Kiplinger.com said we're the ninth best place to live in the entire country. We're the fifth state with entrepreneurial activity, 12th best mid-sized city for jobs, and Alyeska Resort just got two major kudos. The second best ski resort in the world, and in the top 10 bike parks in North America. So kudos to the good folks at Alyeska who have been doing a tremendous job down there. So what is the state of our city? We're financially sound, we're well maintained, we have a vibrant economy, and the challenges that we have with the port and with our other other big issues, we're going to turn those into opportunities. And with that, I'll stop and gladly take any questions that JJ may have accumulated. Thank you.
You are listening to Addressing Alaskans with Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan. He gave his annual State of the City address at the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce on Monday, September 16th. Following his speech, Mayor Sullivan responded to questions submitted by audience members.
Thank you again, Mayor Sullivan. We always appreciate your updates. I have I tried to group these questions into categories because they seem to hover around a couple of categories. There's several on capital projects, so I'm going to go through those first. Is there any chance we will get the 59th Avenue exit to Arctic Boulevard off of the new Dowling Road?
Where's Ken Fuller? Is he in here? That's your question. I know it. I don't know. Just at this stage, don't know. It wasn't funded by the state, and you know we're going to continue to work that issue.
Thank you. When is the Dowling Raspberry connection supposed to be finished?
George, any thoughts on that? Soon. No, but it's a good question. They're working it hard this year. I think we're actually going to be pretty close to finish, if not this year, spring of next year. That's one of our key east-west connectors. After a while, you'll be able to go all the way, literally from Sand Lake, all the way across town on Dowling, and just a vital east-west connector that we've needed. Some of the other ones coming on board, too, will be 100th Avenue, another east-west that will connect Minnesota with C Street. So the Connect Anchorage program that was started under the previous administration with the state, we're really starting to flesh out those connections, and they're almost done.
Great, thank you. Is connecting the Ship Creek bike trail to the coastal trail in the works?
It's part of the master plan for Ship Creek that I showed up there. Again, a key trail connection. Kind of strange that you have Ship Creek stops and Tony Knoll stops, and they kind of look at each other, but there is some complicated land through there between railroad land, and then you get into some coastal wetland stuff, but we're going to make that connection.
Great, thank you. Is there any chance of at least one fenced dog park that's dedicated to small dogs only?
Wow.
The asker put in parentheses, obviously the park doesn't need to be too big.
Yeah. A little mini dog park. That would be pretty cool. So nobody's ever asked me that before, but maybe so. I don't know.
Take it into consideration. This question is, where did the proceeds from selling the armory go?
General fund, right, George? Yeah. Went into the municipal general fund, $4.5 million.
Great. This is a question about the Ship Creek development. And It says the Ship Creek development envisions the city being able to provide the horizontal, as you said. What makes you think that we could do that when we are behind in horizontal needs in other part of Anchorage, such as Gamble, 15th area? Are we going to be able to meet our existing obligations as well as provide additional growth through Ship Creek?
Yes.
All right.
Well, you do it in phases. I mean, just because, we've been, obviously over the last decade or so, we've met a lot of the critical needs of infrastructure in Anchorage. There's no reason to think that going forward, we won't continue to meet those needs, whether it's the Gamble-Ingra corridor or Ship Creek development. Those are all on a list of projects we want to get accomplished, and one by one, you check them off as you get them done.
Okay. These are questions now of financial issues. How much is in the MOA trust fund, and where did it come from?
The trust fund was created when we sold the old ATU telephone utility. It had a high of one time of almost $150 million. It dropped down to about 90-some million after the Great Recession of 2008, and I think we're back up to about $125 million.
Wow, great. This person is asking questions about the dollar amount for the tennis, volleyball, and basketball courts. Over the past couple years, I guess. How much money has the city spent on those, or how much is in the budget?
Yeah, nothing's been spent. This was the request from the Alaska Tennis Association, like I mentioned, similar to the YMCA requesting money for a pool. It looks like it'll be about $10 million.
Okay, great. Is there still an instant response to graffiti policy? Do we still have a graffiti
program?
Yeah,
we still have our graffiti hotline, and we do have, I'm not sure that it's instant, but we do a pretty darn good job. Once a graffiti site is called in, we have a guy, and he's got his little paint matching truck, and he goes out there and gets rid of it.
Great.
So if you see any, call the graffiti hotline.
Thank you.
I should know that number by heart.
Are there any innovative transportation ideas that your administration is mulling over besides the usual sorts of roads, concrete, asphalt, et cetera?
Well, I think, if you look around what's happened over the last number of years, certainly every road we build now has, bike lanes, and there's more and more people taking bikes year-round to work and to play, and so certainly accommodating that form of traffic. All the modern roads have both sidewalks and bike paths, so with the Valley, we're doing, of course, I think we have 40 vans now that come with the rideshare program from the Valley into town, so you don't have to have every one of those people in their personal vehicle. So those are kind of the key ones.
Yeah. Okay. This question is, great ideas, plans for new business and infrastructure. Will these new projects take market share from existing businesses, or do you see a growth in population to support these new projects?
Yeah, no, Anchorage is a growing city. I think at Bill's presentation at AEDC, we're growing at, about 2% a year. In 20 years, that's a 40% larger city. So if you look just in the last few years, the 2010 census had us at 290,000 people. I think we just crossed the 300,000 person mark. So in just a few years, we have 10,000 more people living here. So the growth, I think, will accommodate new businesses.
Great, thank you. This is an education question. It says, you cannot teach kids if they don't show up at school, and absenteeism is a huge problem. What are your thoughts on making parents more responsible and accountable for their kids' education?
Well, that's one of the initiatives I think that United Way is doing a great job with, is making sure that kids do get to school. They're working with the school resource officers, and they literally are going to parents' houses and getting those kids into school. So I think we're making some pretty good progress in that. But the question is correct. I mean, if kids aren't there, they're not going to learn. So I think that is a focus that between the SROs and the United Way effort, I think we're making a dent in it.
Great. And the last one is, can you comment on what you've had to do specifically to take care of the deficits and tax hikes left by your predecessor?
Well, we did a number of things immediately. We put a hiring freeze into effect. We cut back on travel, on overtime. We reorganized departments. And we have just really tried to focus on delivering the services more efficiently, more effectively. We've put many, many services online. It used to be that you had to go to a particular department, stand in line. Now you can do a lot of those things online. So kind of a combination of all of those.
Great. Thank you. And that's all of the questions.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans with Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan. He responded to questions submitted by audience members following his State of the City address, hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce at the Denina Center in Anchorage on September 16, 2013. Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The music is by Patrick Lee. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online anytime at alaskapublic.org. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Platt. Thanks for listening.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.